This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Hey there, cat lovers. Welcome to Nine Lives with Dr. Cat. I'm your host, Dr. Catherine Krim, and this is the podcast where we dive deep into the fascinating world of cats. Today, we're joined by Dr. Chris Pockle, who is a veterinary behaviorist, and he's worked a lot with cats and dogs, actually. And so we're going to delve into some listener questions that I think are fun and interesting about, I don't know, quirky cat-isms. So we'll be right back with Dr. Pockle.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to Nine Lives with Dr. Cat on Pet Life Radio. And as I mentioned, I'm very excited to have a special guest today, Dr. Chris Pockle. Hi, Dr. Pockle.
Hello, Dr. Cat. How are you today?
I am excellent. I'm so excited because I like talking to you and you're a lot of fun and cats are a lot of fun too. So we're going to get to talk about lots of cool things. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Absolutely. So as you said in the intro, I am a veterinary behaviorist, which means I'm a veterinarian first and foremost, but then with a specialty in the behavior side of things. So understanding the psychology of how cats and dogs show up in the world, which takes into account not only their medical needs and some of the options that we have for addressing things on that front, but also goes all the way back to even the ethology and observation that we have of cats and dogs in a quote unquote wild type environment. And how does that inform how we can actually help them out in a companion animal standpoint as well? So all of those things are within the scope of conversation today, and I can't wait to get started.
Well, I can't either. So I'm going to put you on the spot here and I'm going to throw out some interesting questions. And here is the first one. Why do cats love boxes?
I love this question. You know, it's a good question. And I will be the first one to say, I don't actually know what cats are actually thinking all of the time. But we can get some really nice insights based on sort of what they do and when they do it. And I find that when cats are really engaged in boxes, as we're saying here, it can happen for a couple of different reasons. In some cases, it happens when they're looking for a place to hide. So which gives us the insight that it's probably happening because of a sense of security or safety that harkens back to when they were actually hiding in real world scenarios, truly from a life-saving standpoint. So there's some degree of that that is, you know, probably sort of a carryover from that standpoint. I also find that a lot of cats really seek out boxes when they're ready to take a nap. And that probably goes kind of along the same lines of what we were just talking about, that it's a place that is a bit safer. It's a bit more defensible. It may even be something that is relative to, you know, actual temperature regulation, especially if they're in a cooler environment. It's going to be easier for them with their body heat to get comfortable in a more of an enclosed space rather than being sprawled out in the middle of open space. So there are a couple of different reasons where I think it comes from. I think it's fascinating, though, when we really sort of look at that particular detail, we have people who are saying, well, it's not just boxes. I mean, I can put down a square of painter's tape on the floor and my cat will sit within it within minutes or moments in some cases. So there's some really fascinating extensions that we can get into, but I'll leave it there for now and we'll see where the rest of the conversation goes.
You know, that's so weird. I was going to ask you that exact thing. You know, you've seen those videos of people that put tape boxes and the cat's like all over that. So, yeah, that's awesome. You got ahead of me. So you said that a sense of security, safety, maybe. So do you think that stress and security are kind of a big deal for our cats? Because a lot of my guests mention that.
I think it's a huge deal for cats, and I think it's actually a relatively underappreciated deal for them. And I think sometimes, you know, we look at it from our perspective and say, oh gosh, I've had cats forever and I love cats and they're amazing and they're intelligent and they're affectionate and they're all of these things that cats, of course, are. And yet, I think sometimes we forget that the vast majority of the cats that we share our lives with are, in some cases, you know, only just a couple of generations away from truly living a free living, self-providing sort of a lifestyle. And so they are, in many ways, somewhat wild, even though we talk about them as being domesticated, and that's true. So many of the characteristics that they have would allow them to live in a wild type environment. And so, you know, when we think about that and then we transition them into, in many cases, fully indoor lifestyle, a lifestyle that they can't necessarily fully control their distance from potential stressors or triggers, whether that be, you know, people in the household or other animals or toddlers, which are kind of a combination of both, right? People and animals. And, you know, that can absolutely increase stress if we have an animal that's not really fully in control of how they position themselves in the world. And even many of the things that we expect of them aren't really within the skill set of what they would have evolved to navigate truly in that wild environment. So I think there's a lot of potential stressors for cats, and that really do kind of factor into how they show up in the world. And we can see all sorts of extensions from that standpoint.
So what can our listeners do? I mean, if your cat likes boxes, should you provide the boxes for them?
Yes. That's the short answer, right? The too long didn't read, too long didn't listen answer. Yes. I love when cat owners really take a proactive approach to saying, what would it look like to really maximize my cat's ability to use and feel comfortable in this environment? And so that tends to go in a couple different directions for me. One is providing hiding spaces for them, you know, whether that's, you know, under furniture or sometimes, you know, having an end table that we throw a larger than needed sort of a cloth over the top so it creates a little den or a cave underneath. In some cases, it may be having boxes positioned throughout the home. I also am a huge fan of making sure those cats have three-dimensional climbing opportunities and the opportunity to go high when that's really what is meaningful for them. And oftentimes they'll choose it. They'll go high as a way to stay exposed, but out of reach of any of those potential threats that may be there, even just somebody hustling and bustling and moving throughout the house. Oftentimes cats will go high. They can survey their territory and really keep a finger on the pulse or a paw on the pulse of all of the things that are going on while still maintaining their own sense of peace and calm.
So have you ever heard of a cat that doesn't like boxes?
Every once in a while, I will find cats that just have no significant interest. In fact, one of my own cats, who's, I say, unfortunately no longer with me, he was a rag doll, and you'd give him a box and he'd kind of look at it and he might explore a little bit if there was some food inside, but he was not the cat that would have been attracted to that painter's tape trick on the floor. It just didn't seem to trigger that same urge or desire or interaction pattern for him. So yeah, I've lived with one.
You know, I had two cats and I used to have the, you remember when everybody had like the cardboard bags of their groceries? And some places still do. I had one cat that really, really loved those and the other cat didn't. And then the reverse, the plastic baggies. One cat really liked those. And when I would crinkle those, he would get real excited and want to play and the other cat didn't. So, I mean, cats are just their own people, I guess.
They absolutely are. And I think that's actually a point in and of itself that whenever we say, oh, I know cats, and we sort of make that plural and we think we understand everything about all of them,
there's a tremendous, tremendous amount of individual variation. And that's often one of the things that I explore when I'm working with cats and their caregivers on a clinical level is what sort of questions can we ask about what that individual cat is attracted to or not attracted to, and how can we use that information to really provide the best possible environment for them to not just live in, but truly to thrive in.
I absolutely love that. So I want to get into some more things, but I do want to take a quick break so we can get a word from our sponsors and then come back and talk about some other quirky cat things. So we'll be right back.
Molly, here's your dinner. Zeus, that's not your food.
Don't let that happen to your precious cat. Elevate your cat's eating experience with the Cat Tree Tray. The Cat Tree Tray keeps your cat's food off the floor and conveniently located on the cat tree. It's the perfect way to eat. It's a beautiful wrought iron tray that easily attaches to your cat tree and keeps dogs and other critters out of your cat's dish. A must for multi-pet households. There's a 6-inch tray for large bowls and a 4-inch tray for smaller bowls. Purchase your Cat Tree Tray today. Go right now to cattreetray.com. That's cattreetray.com. cattreetray.com.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to Nine Lives with Dr. Cat on Pet Life Radio. Dr. Pockle and I are talking about cats and boxes and cats and fun. And so I wanted to kind of pick your brain about this. What role does the childhood of the cat play in maybe what they like or what they don't like?
My gosh, there's so many layers to this question, and I love it. I love it. So at one level, we can talk about that question in terms of early socialization. And when we talk about the socialization window of cats, we're often referring to that period of time from roughly 2 weeks up to about 7 weeks of age, where it's not just about them learning about the world they're in, but actually the experiences they have within that primary socialization period actually affect the developmental trajectory of their brain and nervous system. And so we're really trying to set them up for success by giving some of that early exposure to whatever their long-term world is going to look like, right? So part of it is, yes, we can sort of program or maybe guide the way their brain develops based on that early exposure. But we also know in a couple of other areas that even something like the, let's say the prey or the live catches that a mother might bring back for the kittens, assuming we're talking about cats who are fending for themselves in a wild type environment, we know that has a formative impact on those cats. And the prey that is brought back to them by mom will actually set their preferences for what they're likely to gravitate towards as prey as they grow up. So again, it's not just socialization, it's not just development, it's even those learned patterns of how do I interact with my world, both in from a survival standpoint, as well as from a comfort and an avoidance of fear and anxiety based on familiarity with all of those early life experiences.
Oh, I love it. I'm so fascinated. That's like one of my favorite things. Okay, but I want to get back to the things that I wanted to focus on. All right, here's another one. What about the zoomies? Can you explain the zoomies?
Yeah, I would say, well, what about the zoomies? Zoomies are completely normal, but no, what are they all about? And this is something, it's funny when you look across truly, as far as I'm concerned, almost every animal species out there, you get those sort of seemingly random, high velocity, almost sort of frantic or spastic bursts of movement. And they look a little bit different, whether we're talking about a cat versus a dog versus a horse versus a toddler, but we all kind of do it. And so, at least in my understanding, they serve a couple of different functions. Sometimes they emerge in play, and we have some of these rapid starts and stops as we're sort of getting an opportunity to blow off some steam and to perhaps even practice some of the acrobatics and movement patterns that we might need in other aspects of our lives.
I also find that for some animals, they might actually happen not just in play, but when there's really any other reason for there to be a sort of a pent up energy. So some cats will do it even when they're a little bit nervous and they're not sure how to navigate whatever that stressor happens to be. So I think they can take a couple of different functions, but I don't know about you, but for me, they're fun to watch. And also you got to be on the lookout, because when they're going through those zoomies, man, they could be moving in any direction and then change that direction in the blink of an eye.
Yes, I absolutely love it. And watching kitten videos where they do that and when they jump sideways, that's like a favorite thing for me. I love it.
Okay. I love that.
Here's another one. I know you've heard it before, but I want to hear what you think about it. What about cats that knock things off of tables?
Oh, gosh. You know, to me, this is one of the great mysteries of the world, right? I can look at it from an ethology standpoint and say, okay, we know that cats have that amazing dexterity within their paws and they interact with the world around them. And yet, when I see cats doing this, in many cases, especially when I have clients and caregivers who are providing videos of these sequences, there's often, not always, but there's often an interactive component to it as well. For example, one of my patients in the process of our training and behavior modification that we were doing with this particular cat basically learned that in the middle of the night, if he wanted to initiate a training session and do some clicker training and get a couple of snacks, all he had to do was sit on the nightstand and start indiscriminately knocking things off onto the floor, and eventually his person would wake up and respond in some particular way. So I think in some cases, there's a sort of a natural curiosity. And I think for many, there's also a bit of an accidentally reinforced pattern that gets a reliable response from their people. And that reinforcement makes it more likely to happen again in the future. So I think there's a multifactorial thing here. And who knows, maybe there's three or four other explanations that the cat would tell us if we could ask them directly.
I agree, but they do have kind of a look of mischief sometimes when they're doing that. And so, yeah, I think there are lots of reasons, but some of it might be to make me go, stop doing that.
Oh, and man, cats are so good at sort of figuring out sort of how to push our buttons, right? I remember Cedric, the ragdoll I was telling you about before, when I was a vet student, the thing that was most reliably going to get my attention was him walking up to me when I was studying and I was, you know, deep in the books at 2 a.m. and he would walk up and just start chewing on the corner of my textbooks. And it drove me crazy, but my reaction was the reinforcer for him. It was better to get that attention than no attention when I was studying. And so that became one of his pastimes, was chewing the binders off of all of my textbooks. And I think truthfully, I created that problem.
You know what? I was going to say the same thing, because one of the questions is, why does my cat always lay on my keyboard? And I know that I created that problem. I know I did.
They're so good at it, right? And this actually comes back to some of the things we were talking about from a stress and an environmental management standpoint, is if you think about the actual sort of natural world of the cat who's fending for themselves, they are out there exploring the three-dimensional world, or snoozing in a sunbeam for, you know, somewhere for sure, but they're exploring the world and they're engaged in those sort of practice predatory chase sequences 20, 30, 40 times per day. Even on an average day, let alone when they need to do that even more often. And then we transition them into an indoor, relatively sedentary, often understimulated, under-enriched sort of an environment. And, well, it's not really ticking all the boxes in their brain as to ways to interact with the world. And so they often figure out very, very quickly how to make us respond by seeing what gets the biggest reactions. And so some of the patterns that I see in cats in the clinic are those things that are somewhat annoying, obnoxious, or intrusive. And those are the things that the caregivers are responding to. And we get into that accidental and unintended reinforcement pattern. And lo and behold, we can create a little monster in the process.
Yes, we can. But sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's not a monster. Sometimes it's just fun. And I loved my cat laying on my keyboard when I was studying. So, you know.
I love that. And that's a great point, Dr. Kat, too. It's like what we determine as a problem isn't actually a problem in other contexts or potentially for all people or for all cats. The perspective really can shift.
Okay, so that brings me to the next one. And I think this one is usually a problem. What about when a cat brings their humans a gift, like something gross or dead or bugs? Can you explain why you think that happens?
Yeah. So as soon as you started, like the first three words, I'm like, ooh, this is going to be a gift question, isn't it? I just had this feeling. So I love that that's where we're going. So yeah, I think there's a couple of different things. I find, at least in my own experience with that particular scenario, that, you know, yes, it's more likely to happen in cats who have a bit more of that hunting instinct. And, you know, when we think about when that would happen, within sort of a more natural environment, it's not at all uncommon for the adults in that social group to capture, kill, or even bring back live some of the prey. And that becomes either sort of a communal event or perhaps as a way of teaching the youngsters how to fend for themselves. So there is a very natural expression of capturing and bringing back to the social group. And well, when we become the social group, some of those patterns still find an outlet. And so, you know, yeah, it is a part of a social relationship and is something that some cats do way more than others. I've even known of some cats who are very, you could almost say, compulsive about how they'll do it. And whether it's actual critters that they're bringing back or other little sort of gift items. And some of these cats will line them up with absolute mathematical precision in a given environment. And I find that even more fascinating than the cats who are a bit random about it.
Oh, I think that's fascinating too. Wow. Okay, so let's just keep going. All right, this is another one that I hear, and I want to hear your thoughts on it. What about kneading or making biscuits?
Ooh, yes. So I love that so many of these things that we're talking about are behaviors or interaction patterns that we can see in those, you know, wild animals. And where we first really see that kneading pattern showing up is often in kittens. And there's often a bit of a sort of a front leg massage that's happening when those kittens are nursing. So there's truly this relationship between that pattern and nursing, food ingestion, or a feeling of sort of restfulness or being content. And so we often see that then in our adult cats as part of that sort of relaxation, down regulation, or perhaps when they are sort of engaging in social interaction or settling in for a nap. So it really does seem to be in a very related context based on where we first see that showing up for kittens over the course of their life.
Okay, so you mentioned big cats, and that brings me into another thing I really wanted to pick your brain about. So do big cats like boxes?
That's actually a great question that I don't know the answer to. I've had the opportunity to work with some big cats over the years when I've done some zoo consulting back when I practiced in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area and a bit here where I am in Portland. But I actually do not know the answer to that. And, you know, when I think about it, my brain says, probably, at least at a fundamental level, when we think about safety and all of that. And yet, when we're talking about the domestic cats that share our households, they're not exactly an apex predator, right? They actually have individuals that may be sort of hunting or antagonizing them as well, compared to when we start talking about lions or tigers or some of the big cats, they're going to have fewer threats to their safety. So I wonder, is it as profound an influence based on the fewer number of threats to them and their own safety? Or is it inherently a cat thing that all of them do? I don't know.
Well, if you watch, you know, videos on the internet, I've seen them, zoo animals in boxes and stuff, and thought, wow, okay. But yeah, that needs to be looked at more. You and I should look into that.
I love it.
So, okay, what about, here's one, can my cat purr when he isn't happy?
Yeah, the short answer there, not that we need a short answer, but the answer is yes, absolutely. And I would say that we see that frequently, especially in hospitalized cats who are often, in some cases, struggling to recover from illness or injury. And we can see that. And so it begs the question, is this something that's only happening when they're happy and content? And no. No, and for some, that that's absolutely when it happens. For others, it's almost like there's a pattern of sort of self-reassurance that happens within that during periods of illness or injury. So, no, I don't automatically assume that when I hear a purr, that that's going to mean just one thing in terms of their emotional state or their overall comfort.
And I think, again, it's the individual cat, because I know cats that don't purr when they come into my office, and some cats that do. I mean, it's just an individual thing. That's what cats are, individuals.
Absolutely. Every one of them's a study of one, right?
Yes. And that's what's special about them, though, I think. But anyway, you mentioned that we kind of took cats, they're sort of similar to their wild ancestors, and we took them and put them in an environment where it's harder to meet their needs. And that actually comes up with a lot of my guests. And so I don't know, maybe my listeners are tired of hearing about it, but I think there are ways we can make indoor cats' lives better. And I would like to hear maybe some of your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think it's really important. And, you know, at the risk of being repetitive, I think we can always hear a little bit more about it, because it is something that is often overlooked. And anybody who hears this for the first time or in a slightly different way, or it's now the third time they've heard it, so they're now going, gosh, maybe I should pay attention to this. I think it's really relevant. And so, you know, I look at really meeting their needs and what does that look like, especially if we're talking about a multi-cat environment. Some of them we've mentioned already, the things like providing them with hiding spaces and opportunities for climbing and that three-dimensional living, for sure. I also find that when we look at how cats survive in the wild type environment, they're not meal feeders. They are typically eating small meals many times throughout the day. Now, I know that for our cats in our households, if we were to just sort of put that full bowl of food out in the kitchen, we might end up with an overweight or obesity issue on our hands. So I'm not advocating necessarily for that free choice feeding, but trying to mimic that to some degree with small, frequent meals, or perhaps even better, providing some of the meals in interactive or a chase or interaction-based feeding devices. There's some that are commercially made. There's also a lot of do-it-yourself options available with searches on the internet. But trying to provide that way of eating, that way of food consumption, and create a bit more of an interactive process rather than just walking up to the bowl in the corner, I think that's really important. I also look at them, you know, not only from an environmental standpoint with the hiding and the climbing, but also making sure they have convenient, comfortable access to a toileting location. They're going to need to urinate and defecate multiple times per day. And if they're having to navigate toddlers and dogs, or, you know, the laundry or whatever else it is to get to their toileting spot, that can be a source of stress for them. So really thinking about what your cat needs, including opportunities to sleep and rest for many hours throughout the day. When any of those areas are sacrificed or not being met adequately, that starts to add up as a cumulative stress impact for those cats. And we can have a huge impact by really being mindful in all of those areas.
Okay, so you've mentioned toddlers several times, and so I feel like you need to come back and we'll do a show about ways to help households with toddlers or kids or whatever make cat friendly, made more cat friendly. So can you come back and talk with me more about that?
I would love to. And truly, when we're talking about toddlers, oh gosh, we can talk forever about the impact that they bring to households, positive and stressful, all at the same time.
Absolutely. So before we wrap this up, though, what are some of the questions that maybe you get specifically when you're looking at behavior cases, or something maybe that I did not cover? Is there anything that you want to add in?
Yeah. So one of the ones that comes up pretty commonly is, I'm petting my cat and sometimes he or she bites me. I call it a love bite, but what's that all about? Right? Have you ever heard that one, Dr. Cat?
Oh, that's a good one. Oh, that one should have been here. Listeners, you got to step up your game. Yep, that's a good one.
I love that one. And it's actually fascinating when you watch cats interacting with one another. And when they're engaged in a mutual grooming event, they're often grooming one another around sort of the head, neck, and shoulders area. Often not behind the shoulder, unless you're a mom or a caregiver grooming an offspring or a youngster. And so sometimes that petting-induced aggression, if we put the official label on it, is simply because we're actually petting them in a way that's really kind of rude or inappropriate based on where we're petting or how long we're petting. And we also find that in other cases, even when cats are enjoying those interactions with one another, sometimes that's just how they end that, basically to say, and I'm done now. And so we can see that as a form of communication. And of course, you know, the little love bite is probably more along the lines of that, just I'm done now. But in some cases, especially if we have a cat who has any degree of musculoskeletal stiffness or soreness or arthritis changes as they get even just a little bit older, sometimes being picked up or petted can actually be a source of physical discomfort for them. So really being mindful of all of those things and being really respectful in how we interact with them, I think is a great way to enhance that bond and that sense of trust and safety that we have with them and they have with us.
Cats have boundaries. We all need boundaries.
Yes, well, we do.
Thank you so much for sharing your insights on quirky and catisms. I've learned a lot today, and I know that our listeners did as well. So, of course, thank you to our producer, Mark Winter, and thanks to the listeners. And Dr. Pockel, we'll definitely bring you back, whether or not it's talking about toddlers. This has been so incredibly fun. So thank you.
You are absolutely welcome. It's my pleasure to be here. And it's always fun when I have a host like yourself who really dives into some of the fun questions and we can peel back these layers and really dive in. Thank you for having me.
Love it. Love it. So listeners, if you like what you heard, please like, subscribe, review, tell your friends, everything. And thank you all for your time to listen to our show today, and go out and have a perfect day.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.